Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today we're going to be talking about some new films that are out in the theaters. Jupiter Ascending, Seventh Son, two films that were delayed in release, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, the Academy Award-nominated Song of the Sea, and Match. We're also going to be talking about some news, including some legal actions Disney is going after people for an Episode 7 leak, and a Ben-Hur remake. There's also going to be the Trailer Park, box office predictions, and the world-famous DVD Roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch, here's how you get a hold of me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Yes, we're rolling into the news for this segment. Again, nothing too heavy and weighty. The last couple of weeks, we've been talking about stuff like American Sniper, and we also talked about The Interview about a month ago. So there's actually been some pretty hard news intersection with entertainment news. The two things I really want to talk about. First of all, apparently there were some Star Wars Episode 7 image leaks. This happens in the movies all the time, especially with the internet and the easy availability of information. There's always leaks, and any Star Wars movies has leaks. I remember back in the early 80s when somebody finally was leaking stills from The Return of the Jedi, which was famously under, I think, the name Blue Harvest. And somebody snuck into the sets and they took pictures and they saw the vehicles and stuff from the Tatooine set. And it was a big deal, but it was much harder to get that information out there because not only A, did you have to get physical copies of prints and film, you had to get those to a publication that would then actually print them. It was very hard to disseminate this information. Now with the internet and Twitter and websites, you can just get any image, put it up there, and immediately it's disseminated to the entirety of the world. Pretty much, who has an internet connection. Well, there were some stills from the new Star Wars movies that were leaked, and Disney's not messing around. Disney is going after these people. They're going after the website who hosted it and trying to find out who actually did it, the real personalities, the real names behind the anonymous posts. And again, just as easy as it is to get the stuff out there, it's a lot easier to track this stuff down because everything has a digital signature. If you have enough people who know what they're doing, you can find out who originally leaked these things. They're out there. The images are out there. I'm sure you can find them. I avoid them because I mean, it's, we're what, 10 months away from Star Wars releasing? I don't want to see all the stuff beforehand, but there are people who do. But the bottom line is Disney is a major company and it has deep, deep pockets. And the Star Wars franchise is being set up to be as big as the Marvel franchise going forward. In terms of movies, Star Wars has always been big, and the merchandising has been a big deal, but they're ready to do spinoffs and a movie every year. And it's not even that those images are so damaging to Disney or the release of Episode 7. I had a friend who would talk about seals in the wild will get up on a rock and bark, and then they fight each other. This is Disney climbing on a rock and barking very loudly to let everybody know, hey, this is unacceptable, and we're going to go after people who do it. They're setting the stage, so if somebody decides to sneak out a work print of Episode 7, the way the Wolverine movie was released, or Expendables 3 ended up leaking out there, they're like, if we're going to go after the images, we're going to go after anybody who downloads an actual video, unallowed scenes. And I remember back several years ago, Paramount had control of the Thor franchise, there were leaks out as well, like stills showing the outfits and the costuming. This is Disney just barking on a rock and saying, we're not going to stand for this and we're going to go after you. Images aren't as damaging, but this is Disney setting the stage and saying, you can't do this for this franchise because we will crush you. And they have the legal right to do that. Now, another piece I want to talk about is the Ben-Hur remake has been cast and started principal photography. First of all, I was unaware that there's a Ben-Hur remake, which to me is like remaking Psycho. Now, I actually have a confession to make. I have not seen Ben-Hur. I know, as a film guy, that's sort of shameful. But also as a guy who's only been reviewing films for about a dozen years or so, there's a whole bunch of them that I missed. And Ben-Hur, I never watched on the small screen because it was kind of, you know, it's not a small screen movie. And ever since I've gotten to the point where you can see it on a home theater on a big screen, I've just never gotten around to seeing it because it's like a 9-hour movie. Well, it's like 4 hours. I just haven't had the chance to see it. I actually have a copy of it on Blu-ray, but I also would never be arrogant enough to remake it. I think it's kind of folly at this point, but it's directed by Tim Moore, and I'm going to butcher the last name, Beckmambetov, and he's the guy who did Wanted and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and the Night Watch movies from Russia because he's Russian. The guy's an okay director. I think he's got neat stuff, but this is possibly a fool's errand to try and remake Ben-Hur because it's such an iconic movie. It'd be like remaking Gone with the Wind, which I have seen. It just seems ridiculous. Now, they're filming it already, and the only real recognizable name in this film is Morgan Freeman. And as much as I like a good historical epic, and even something like Exodus, which was okay for what it was, essentially similar to a Ten Commandments remake, as close as you could get. But at least it wasn't calling itself the Ten Commandments. It was just Exodus. It was doing something different. I don't know. I mean, the idea of a Ben-Hur remake is, this is something I think is going to lose a lot of money. I just don't see it happening in any way that this is going to be as near of a classic. And I don't think it's going to be something that kids are interested in. I think a lot of the adults who like the original are going to enjoy it. I'm just still sort of floored that they're doing a Ben-Hur remake, but it's in production. Morgan Freeman's in it. He's really the only big name in it. There's some smaller names that you might recognize in some faces, but Morgan Freeman's it. And he doesn't even play God. So what do you expect? You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, and that sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm going to actually just burn through three trailers right now. There's the Super Bowl spots because, yeah, they've dropped a Magic Mike sequel trailer and they've got a complete Fast and Furious trailer out now. But let's talk about the Super Bowl spot because, of course, the Super Bowl was filled with trailers for movies. And I'm only going to hit three of them really quickly. The first one is Furious 7, which does open on April 3rd, but this is the Super Bowl spot that we saw last Sunday.
Looks like the sins of London have followed us home. Remember Owen Shaw? This is Big Bad Brother.
We're being hunted.
I'm going with you.
One last ride. Daddy's gotta go to work.
This takes crazy to a whole nother level. Woo!
What's up now? This franchise fascinates me. It's a lot of fun, and it attaches itself to the audience so well. But these movies have gotten so ridiculous. I mean, they were like stealing VCR DVD combos in the first movie. This film doesn't look like it resembles the first one or two or three, even remotely closely. They turned into James Bond movies. And so they're turning into fun action movies. We'll see what happens on April 3rd. This is, of course, like the other ones that have released around this time frame. It's testing the waters to see if April can be a very viable $200 to $300 million movie release weekend. The next one is Jurassic World, which opens on June 12th. This is a Super Bowl spot.
Eyes on me. Good.
We have a new attraction. Think it'll scare the kids?
This will give the parents nightmares.
He just went and made a new dinosaur?
Probably not a good idea.
It's killing for sport.
You got 20,000 people with nowhere to go.
We're going after it with everything we got.
There's a couple new things that we heard in this one. First of all, we learned that Chris Pratt plays a trainer for the Velociraptors, which is kind of cool. I mean, it's basically a giant dinosaur SeaWorld is what this place is. It's an adventure park, and it gives a bigger idea of the danger that's out there. The only thing that worries me about this one is sort of just the innocent bloodshed that's possibly going to be happening, which to me is a little disturbing, the cavalier attitude of that, but it's an adventure movie. There's parts of it that look pretty good. I'm looking forward to it. The third one I want to hit real quickly is Terminator Genesis, and this is a short part from the Super Bowl trailer.
Load up. Everything's changed.
I've been waiting for you.
I'll be back.
What?
What I find fascinating about this one is not just that I kind of like the Terminator series, even for its warts. What I find fascinating about this trailer is it's just a spotlight on Schwarzenegger. They don't talk about Matt Smith, Jack Courtney, or anybody. It's just, hey, Schwarzenegger's in this movie, both young and old. And that's what's getting people excited about it, not Jack Courtney. With that, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Seventh Son and the SpongeBob movie. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's roll into these movie reviews, because that's what I do here. Unflinchingly honest, unafraid, and incredibly sexy movie reviews coming at you through your radio, through your ears, into your brain, where you can decide whether or not I'm full of garbage. There's a big debate going on about that on the internet right now. So let's go ahead and just move on. Let's hit the movie reviews this week. The first one is Seventh Son. A young man is recruited by a knight to battle an evil witch he imprisoned many years ago.
I have been searching for you, Mr. Ward. You are the seventh son of a seventh son.
An order of noble knights combating the forces of darkness.
It says here that there are 1,000 of you.
They all died. We are all that's left.
Teach me.
Live in a world now where legend and nightmare are real.
This one has been bumped around release-wise, and when you see it, if you see it, which is not going to be very many people, you'll see why. I find it funny that you get movies like The Lord of the Rings, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and you had The Hobbit that have just come out over the last 3 years, and these are sword and sandal epic, and those movies do incredibly well. I mean, the Hobbit movies have made like almost $3 billion between all three of them. And then you get a movie like this that reeks of Krull. If you remember Krull back in the 80s, it was a fantasy movie. And before CGI and elements like that, you had just really bad fantasy movies that looked very dirty. And fantasy movies really didn't sort of hit their peak until The Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter, when you have digital tools that allow you to make really cool effects and like make dragons and ogres and that sort of thing. Now, this movie uses those digital tools, but it just looks cheap. It looks cool if you just take it sliced out just the effects, but I don't know if they've spent a lot of money on this or if these are just really good effects out of the can that they really don't have to spend a ton of money on or a ton of time on, because they really didn't put a whole lot of thought into it. You see these effects, like when these witches in here, they shapeshift. And they just sort of shapeshift in this flipping of smoke that you've seen a million times before. Digital effects have become so common that it's nothing new. It's like morphing from the 90s. It just doesn't look new anymore. It doesn't look cool. And while the dragon looks cool, the dragons that they have and the monsters that they have, there's just nothing to this movie. It's a big letdown. And I mean, it has some great actors in it. It has Julianne Moore and Jeff Bridges in it. It's the weirdest Big Lebowski reunion you're ever going to see. In fact, the only way I would really want to watch this movie again is if it were edited into the Big Lebowski as the dream sequences. Take those Busby Berkeley dream sequences out of the movie and edit in this movie with Jeff Bridges versus Julianne Moore. They're both really good actors, and they both are very well respected. She's probably going to win an Academy Award for Still Alice later this month. And Jeff Bridges won an Academy Award for Crazy Heart a couple years ago. These people are so respected, and they're in such a terrible movie. It's really kind of embarrassing. The dialogue's laughable. It's painfully written, and it doesn't make a whole lot of internal sense. because it's this witches versus knights that they hint to a history of it, but they really don't explain what the history is and why this one witch has so much power and why the guy locked her in this basically a hole in the ground with a steel grate over it and then left her there. And then like 10 years later, she's out and he's like, oh, I didn't realize you'd escape. It's just, it's dumb. And the other thing, the thing I couldn't get past in this movie is Jeff Bridges' voice. Did he, like, have a stroke or something and change the way he speaks? I don't think so, because I've seen him in interviews and he doesn't speak like this. But he now, he's done a whole string of movies where he sounds like my father trying to do a British accent. My dad used to tell jokes when I was a kid, and they'd be like, and then the wealthy British nobleman came into the pub and says, oh, hello there, ho, 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 pip, pip, cheerio, and all that rot. That was my father's British accent. Sounded nothing like a British accent, but it sounds remarkably like Jeff Bridges in this movie. He delivers his lines all like this. This is how he talks. In all of the movie. Every scene. And what's amazing is I thought about that and I go, you know, he kind of did that in The Giver last August. And then that's kind of like what he did in RIPD, only in RIPD he gave a little bit of a southern twang because he was supposed to be an old-time sheriff. And then I thought back, I'm like, that's kind of the voice he did in True Grit. And in the Tron Legacy, I guess he was sort of doing the dude from The Big Lebowski. Crazy Hardy was kind of like, I mean, I think you have to go back to like Iron Man before you find him actually kind of talking normal in a starring role. And even then, he kind of slathered that one with cheese. Anyways, Seventh Son is exactly as bad as you think it's going to be. It is a stinker of a film. It was screened super late for press in top markets. It wasn't even screened for press where I was. I had to go pay to see this movie. I took the bullet for you guys. Seventh Son sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I'm going to talk about is the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water. The Nickelodeon character travels through space and time and eventually onto dry land to track down a stolen Krabby Patty recipe.
Who wants Krabby Patty? Secret Krabby Patty formula! It's gone!
Without it, it will be a complete breakdown of social order!
Aren't you overreacting a bit?
Welcome to the apocalypse! I hope you like leather.
I smell Krabby Patties from over there!
What are you doing with me formula?
You mean... me formula!
Now, what's interesting about this movie is, actually, it was almost 11 years ago they released another SpongeBob movie. The SpongeBob SquarePants movie came out in 2004, and it was a massive hit. And that was at sort of the height of SpongeBob SquarePants. I mean, the show still exists, and it's played ad nauseum on Nickelodeon. And kids still love it. I took my six-year-old to see it. Look, if you don't like SpongeBob and you think he's annoying, which a lot of people do, and you don't think you can take more than 2 minutes of him, don't go see this movie. Or bring the earplugs and take your kid. Your kids are going to like it. Anyone who's a fan of SpongeBob is going to like this movie. It's very much made for the SpongeBob fan. What's neat about it, which I actually liked more than the SpongeBob SquarePants movie that they made 11 years ago, this one feels like it's a bigger movie. It's not just an extended episode. They do some fun things in this. They have this whole time travel sequence that's really kind of neat animation. It has some interesting cameos, voice cameos by people. Antonio Banderas plays the pirate who steals the Krabby Patty recipe. And he's really funny. I mean, he's great. Antonio Banderas is a real game for doing fun stuff like that. It has some really neat sight gags and jokes and one-liners that I think are better written than the TV show. This one, you can tell they spent a little more time on the script. They made the humor a little smarter, and they still have the obnoxiousness, but it's a lot of self-referential stuff. It really works in terms of story. And then, of course, when they finally get on dry land and they have the CGI versions of them, that's a lot of fun, too. I'm going to warn you, that doesn't happen until later in the movie. It's like an hour in before they actually get on dry land, and you don't know that from the trailer. So my son was next to me. He's like, when are they going to get on land? I go, they'll get there. Just wait a minute. But it's a lot of fun. It's a completely mindless, stupid movie, but SpongeBob, the show, is a completely mindless, stupid show, property, franchise. And I was surprised at how much I liked this movie. I chuckled, I laughed. It wasn't like I was trying to get away. I was trying to get away from the SpongeBob SquarePants animated film from 11 years ago. This one's a lot of fun. It's cute. So the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, kinda rocks.
It kinda rocks.
That's enough of SpongeBob. I gotta go to a break. When I come back, I'm gonna be talking about Jupiter Ascending and Song of the Sea. with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back at you. We're going to continue talking about movie reviews. The first one let's hit is Jupiter Ascending. This is directed by the Wachowskis, who did Cloud Atlas and Speed Racer, and most famous for the Matrix trilogy. And this is originally was supposed to come out, I believe, last summer. And now they're finally releasing it, oddly enough, in February, which seems to be a step down in terms of confidence from the studio. Anyways, intergalactic bounty hunters track down a woman of nobility on Earth in order to lay claim to the planet as their developmental property.
Your planet was seeded by Brass Axe Industries roughly 100,000 years ago.
It's one of the most powerful dynasties in the universe. There are three primary heirs. The oldest is Blem. He's the one that controls this planet and wants you dead.
I'm telling you, I'm nobody.
I will harvest that planet tomorrow before I let her take it from me.
The story's really kind of hard to explain. I'm not as hard as Cloud Atlas. Cloud Atlas was, oh man, that thing was a bear to kind of encapsulate into a sentence. But I loved Cloud Atlas. I thought Cloud Atlas was a fascinating, beautiful movie that nobody else really cared for. And I kind of have a feeling Jupiter Ascending's going to be the same way. I really enjoyed Jupiter Ascending. I had a lot of fun watching it. I thought its visuals, like anything that Wachowskis give us, are arresting and fascinating and gorgeous. And they've got a great sense of action. They have some fantastic moments. If you just want to see things getting blown up, you know, you've got laser guns and flying dog men and giant refineries on Jupiter. It's kind of a fascinating movie to behold visually. That's a sign of the Wachowskis working on something. When it comes to the story, it fits a lot better than I thought it would. When I first saw the trailers for this, I'm like, you don't know what to think. And it's not as out there as Cloud Atlas, but it has this real high concept sci-fi feel to it, and in a way of like the old pulp magazines. I'm not talking about Star Wars in the movies. Star Wars and like now the Avengers films, those are all sci-fi, and those are very digestible. Star Trek, same way, very digestible from a mass mainstream perspective. It's not hard to figure those movies out. It's also not something that's sort of this faux intellectual like the stuff that Christopher Nolan gives us, like Interstellar or Inception, that everyone says, oh, this is so smart, when they're really not. They're just dumb stories that we've seen before on The Twilight Zone, just done with big special effects and a booming soundtrack. This one actually feels like the old pulp magazines, Asimov Science Fiction, Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, Analog, which used to be Astounding and Amazing Stories. These kind of high concept pieces dealing with galactic power and politics, more so than like Trade Federation routes that we saw in the Star Wars movies in the 90s and the 2000s. And that's really kind of cool to see, but there's a reason why that was a niche audience. These are not mainstream stories that everyone's going to initially latch themselves onto. So as much scope as this movie has, I don't think it's something that gets the audience as excited about. And that's a shame, because I hope the Wachowskis never stop making movies, because I think their movies are gorgeous. And I think their movies are beautiful and fascinating, and they sometimes have a lot of depth to them. And they're movies that give you something unlike anything else you're going to see in the theaters. But at the same time, I think it's going to have a hard time cracking that mainstream audience. Part of it, it's weirdly cast. I actually think Mila Kunis and Channing Tatum, who play the leads in this, Mila Kunis is this woman of royalty that she doesn't know, because she cleans toilets on Earth, and she finds out that she has the birthright to own Earth itself. And Channing Tatum plays this dog-human hybrid soldier. But I actually think they both do decent work in the movie. They could be better. I think Mila Kunis is a little more out of her depth than Channing Tatum is. He actually does a pretty good job, but he's just supposed to look stoic and be a soldier. It kind of works for him from a dramatic perspective. I think Channing Tatum's a brilliant comedic actor. He's just okay when it comes to drama. And that's ultimately what he's playing. Eddie Redmayne plays the bad guy, and he chews through the scenery. It's amazing, because when you watch this, it's fascinating to realize he's nominated for an Oscar for The Theory of Everything, which he's fantastic in. But here he plays this breathy, villainous bad guy. I mean, he's like channeling Gary Oldman in his level of evil. I find it a lot of fun. I mean, he commits 100% to a ridiculous voice. I think it's going to be more laughable to some people to watch it without, you know, just sort of getting into the fun of the movie. I really enjoyed this film. And I hope that people also enjoy it. And I think that if you want to go to an out-of-the-box sci-fi movie that's not exactly anything like anything you've ever seen before, check this one out. It's really cool. But don't expect it to be Star Wars or The Avengers. It's not that kind of sci-fi. But it's still a great little film to check out. So I'm going to say Jupiter Ascending rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to the next film. This is Song of the Sea. It's nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Film, along with things like Big Hero 6 and The Box Trolls. Every year, the Academy throws out a release in terms of the animated ones that you're like, oh, okay, you expect the Pixar Disney movie to show up in there. And then they'll throw out one that people are like, huh? Never heard of it. Like The Secret of the Kells, which came out several years ago, and it was nominated for an Oscar. The same people do Song of the Sea. It's this sort of Irish-Belgium-France metro company that's putting these on, and it takes place in Ireland. In The Song of the Sea, a small Irish boy must protect his younger sister, who has the ability to turn into a seal when they are moved to the city.
She's not safe in this awful place.
Oh, Granny. She's going to try and make us move to the city again.
At last, we found her!
Saoirse! Run!
Those stories that Mum told me, they're all true. Are you really a Selkie?
Like I said, this is done by the people who did The Secret of the Kells. It's steeped in Irish tradition, and the whole idea of a girl or a woman being able to change into a seal is actually a legend in Ireland. They're called Selkies, and there have been other films that have dealt with Selkies, like The Secret of Ronan-ish. Selkies are sort of like the Irish mermaid. They're seals that can emerge, and they take off their skin, their seal skin or a cloak, and they become human, and if they have that cloak, they can get into it and then return to the sea and become a seal again. And that's what the story is. This man falls in love with a Selkie and they have kids. And the daughter is also a Selkie. And when the mother goes back to the sea, the father's raising the two kids alone. And then the girl keeps wanting to go into the sea. She feels the call of the sea and she sings the song of the sea. And to save her, because he's afraid she's going to drown, the father moves them to the big city. And they're fighting against an evil owl queen who is trying to capture all these mythical creatures and emotions and sort of keep everybody safe from despair and sadness. And she's sort of in her own twisted way. This is a beautiful movie. It's gorgeously animated and very traditionally animated. It's done with traditional ink and paint cells. It uses CGI to enhance and to blend the elements. Beautifully animated, gorgeous music. It's a very sweet story. Not a whole lot of people are going to see this. It's getting a limited release now. You can check it out in my hometown at the Gateway Theater in Columbus over this weekend. But this is one, if you'd all like animation, this is one that's worth seeing. A lot of people have seen Big Hero 6, and I love Big Hero 6, and a lot of people have seen The Box Trolls. Again, something else I dearly, dearly love. And then, of course, How to Train Your Dragon 2. That was a big release. Everyone knows those. Song of the Sea is one you want to search out, especially if you love animation, you got kids. It's a gorgeous movie. And what's funny is The Tale of Princess Kaguya, which is also nominated for an Academy Award, which we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago, has a lot of connective material with Song of the Sea. It's about a Japanese mythical creature that grows up as a human. And then, of course, there's the call for her to return to her rightful family in the stars. There's a lot of similarities between these two movies. And both of these are beautiful films that if you have a chance to see, check it out. They're not populist entertainment like Big Hero 6 is. And I love Big Hero 6. Equally worth seeing for the animation, for the heart and soul behind it. Like Ernest and Celestine last year, which was the one about the bear and the mouse that became friends. That was another one you should seek out. Everything's not just Pixar and DreamWorks animated films. And as good as those movies are, it's always nice to see something a little bit different, a little bit smaller, but equally beautiful and worth checking out on the big screen. So Song of the Sea rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
That's it for this. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Match with Patrick Stewart, the box office, and the world-famous DVD Roundup.
Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr rolling into the final segment. We're going to be talking about one more film and, of course, box office and some DVDs you might want to check out. First, let's continue with the movie reviews. This one is Match. Patrick Stewart stars as a world-renowned choreographer who enters a harsh personal confrontation about his past while being interviewed.
You've choreographed operas at almost every major theater in the world.
This is true.
Now you're teaching at America's most prestigious dance school.
Also true.
So, I guess the first thing I'd like to know is why, how, and where you started teaching.
How long is the tape?
Could you talk about what it was like in the 60s?
He asked questions, too. We exhausted ourselves with sex.
Can you just tell us whether or not those are the dates that you remember?
I'm afraid I'm becoming uncomfortable with this interview.
This is a smaller movie. It actually got a limited release starting in January, and it's based on a play. And when you see the movie, it very much is just a handful of people talking in a room. It gets out of the room in the opening and the ending a little bit. But most of the movie, the bulk of the film, takes place in his apartment as he's being interviewed. He's being interviewed by somebody who's writing a dissertation. Her and her husband are there, and her husband starts asking him a little more personal questions and questions that may not have anything to do with his career. This is really one of those spotlight performances for Patrick Stewart. I'm surprised it got a release at this time because it feels like it should have been released in December or November because it seems like he's going for Oscar, but he's not really, this really isn't an Oscar bait film. I guess that's part of it, but it doesn't feel like Stewart's out to win an Oscar or a BAFTA for this. It feels like he just wants to perform something different. I mean, this is not Jean-Luc Picard or Professor X, which he's most known for. But, of course, Patrick Stewart has a long, rich history in the theater and in the arts long before he set foot on an Enterprise set. He was well-renowned as a Shakespearean actor, and I think this is great because it gives him a chance to be something different than what most people think of him as. This gives him a chance to really stretch his legs and to show that he can act outside of his normal zone. And there's a couple twists or reveals in this movie that are utterly and completely and painfully obvious. And I don't know if they were meant to not be obvious. I didn't know if they were trying to say, oh, we're really, you know, going to surprise people when we reveal this is what's going on, or whether they're saying, well, this is just a part of the story. I mean, there's the one big reveal in the middle, and I'm like, well, gosh, I saw that coming from, like, almost the opening scene. And then there's other things that happen that I said, well, this is probably what's going to happen in this movie. And I was absolutely right. But you don't see this movie for the twists and turns and the reveals and what happens necessarily in terms of plot. It's more of a performance-based piece, and it's more of acting and the interaction and what gets the characters from one place to the next. That you know they start here, you know it's going to end up here, and it's their journey. And it also stars Carla Gugino, who is a beautiful woman. It's great to see her doing a meaty acting performance. I think she does a fantastic job in this movie. You don't usually get to see her really act. She's sort of either butt-kicking woman in a movie, or she's kind of eye candy. Even though she's in her 40s now, she still is a beautiful woman. And I think she can pull off the attractive, yet also a little more mature and seasoned star. So I think this was a great performance for her. Matthew Lillard also plays in it. He plays a little bit over the top and predictable. But that's your three. It's the three of them acting together. And it's great to see because Patrick Stewart really kind of owns it. Now, of course, he really feels like a theater performance. In fact, earlier in the movie, there's a scene where they first meet in a restaurant. And he's projecting almost a little bit too much for the screen. If you acting for the stage is very different from acting from the screen. And it feels like Stewart's acting for the stage, at least in this. And I think that may have been deliberate because the character's supposed to be nervous. Because I think Stewart's done both enough to know when to dial it back. It's really great to see if you like the actors. I mean, if you want to see Jean-Luc Picard, you're not going to get Jean-Luc Picard in this movie. Yeah, if you want to see Jean-Luc Picard and Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, That is not what this movie is. But those are the actors that are in this movie. It's worth checking out. So I'm going to say that Match kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on into the box office and talk about the winners. Last week I said that American Sniper, I predicted it was going to make $30 million. I was almost dead on this one. It made $30.6 million, which is almost, this is what's kind of amazing. That is almost the record for a Super Bowl weekend, whether a movie opens or not. It didn't quite match the current record, which actually is also the opening Super Bowl weekend, which is 31 point some million dollars for the Miley Cyrus Best of Both Worlds concert. So I know you could say, well, American Sniper was taken down by Miley Cyrus. Well, first of all, Miley Cyrus, Hannah Montana concert, that opened that weekend. And yeah, it was limited release, but it was premium tickets because it was 3D and IMAX. And this is what, like the fifth week of release for American Sniper, if you count its initial releases, but it's something like the fourth week of actual wide release. American Sniper, it's got to be open for a month before it starts seeing what would be considered disappointing weekends for the opening weekend. $30 million still would have been a good opening weekend for American Sniper. Mark my word, American Sniper is going to end up becoming the highest grossing film of 2014. Domestically, because right now it was Guardians of the Galaxy for the longest time, and then it was Mockingjay Part 1 just barely squeaked ahead of it. But I really think that American Sniper is doing so well that it's over $250 million now. And it's still got plenty of legs. In the new releases, Project Almanac topped the new releases with $8.3 million, which is not very good. That is not good for any kind of movie that this is. Now, it was cheap as heck to make because it was found footage. But the idea of moving the found footage genre into sci-fi is not doing well. In fact, I think that the found footage framework hurt this. And I've actually now talked to people who normally are okay with found footage who've said, yeah, that didn't work for this movie. The genre just is, it's losing steam and it's revealing it as just a gimmick at this point. And Project Almanac probably would have been a lot better if it was done as a traditional non-found footage film. Then Black or White came in fourth with $6.2 million, which is miserable release numbers for a movie that stars Kevin Costner that also was pushed as hard as this one was. And I saw somebody actually point out, they're like, you know what, I really don't think Mike Binder and Kevin Costner, two of the whitest guys you'll ever meet, really should be doing movies about, you know, spearheading movies about racial diversity. It just seems a little disingenuous. And then The Loft at number 10 was miserable, $2.7 million. And I remember I railed against this movie. I've actually been quoted on German websites for my review of how much I didn't like this movie. And I've gotten flames from people who are going after me because I got somebody complaining saying, well, the American press is afraid of adultery and that's why we didn't like it. I'm like, no, well, none of the people were decent characters, so you didn't care for them. But there were also some really stupid, they take that out of it. This movie, there were some dumb plot twists. And you had people like Isabel Lucas, who is, I mean, I would love to see Isabel Lucas and Megan Fox do like a remake of Thelma and Louise. That would be the most hilarious movie. Or if they ever make a Cagney and Lacey movie, Megan Fox and Isabel Lucas. It would be the biggest train wreck since I had suggested that Steven Seagal do Hamlet. Just because it would be hilarious to watch. It wouldn't be a good movie, far from it, but it would have been extremely entertaining. This week, I think SpongeBob's going to win. I think SpongeBob's good for $25 to $30 million. Let's just say $30, and I think it's going to end up topping American Sniper, but, you know, and then be like, oh, SpongeBob finally takes out American Sniper. I'm like, well, yeah, after, like, it's been in the theaters for weeks. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. This week, we've got some pretty good movies. You've got John Wick, which is out on DVD and Blu-ray, which is a lot of fun, very violent, shoot 'em up movie with Keanu Reeves as a hitman coming back into the game so he can take revenge on the people who killed his dog. There's also Dracula Untold, which is not as bad as it could have been. It's a more of an action version of Dracula, and it's this sort of this historical story of how he came to be. This is Universal rebooting their Universal Monsters franchise, and I hope they move ahead on this well. I don't necessarily want to see origins of everybody. I kind of want to just see Monster Smackdown, like the old Frankenstein meets the Wolfman or House of Dracula, House of Frankenstein kind of movies. There's also Ouija, which isn't a terrible movie, but it's a complete slumber party film. You know, it's like PG-13 horror where it has scary stuff, but really it's only going to scare, you know, girls in their pajamas watching it with the lights off, which is itself a horror movie setup on its own. And then for real horror, you can check out the ABCs of Death 2. These were all October releases, as if you can't tell. ABCs of Death 2 is another anthology, 26 horror stories, very grisly, very violent. Please don't show this to Spanish classes ages 14 to 18. You might lose your job and go to jail. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. ABCs of Death 2, I actually think, is a better film than the first one. I think it's got some better stories since it had a little more notice behind it. And then Dear White People, which we also talked about a couple weeks ago, which is about racial tensions on campus. And it, at times it's very unflinching, and it challenges a lot of racial issues. It does get a little bit preachy at times and gets in its own way, but it's still worth checking out for the satire. Then the stinker of the week is The Best of Me, which is seriously not the best of anybody, let alone Nicholas. It might be the best of Nicholas Sparks, because Nicholas Sparks is so bad. That's it for this week. Next week, for Valentine's Day weekend, we're going to be talking about Kingsman, The Secret Service, Das Sweet Blood of Jesus, the vampire movie by Spike Lee, and, 50 Shades of Grey. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.